Tammy, would you introduce our speaker for us?
Thank you, Jay. My name is Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hi,
Tammy.
Tammy.
Thank you, Helen, for asking me to introduce our speaker this evening. I feel like it's a great privilege and an honor to do so. I feel very blessed to know this lady. This lady is a guiding force and a guiding light for many in the fellowship, including myself. This lady has and walks with such grace, dignity, has such a caring, loving heart, and has given so much back to the fellowship in so many ways that, especially in service, that I can only hope to emulate a little bit of the path that this lady has walked and continues to walk and continues to pave that path for many. So, with my great privilege, I introduce this evening's speaker, Penelope. Over to you, Penelope.
I'm very pleased that I was asked to do the show, and my name's Penny, and I am an addict.
Hi, Penelope.
I am, yeah, a lot of people know me as Penny. Depends how long you've known me. I've been in
Hello,
it.
Penelope. Hello,
Oh,
Penny.
Penelope.
Hi, Penny.
A lot of people know me as Penelope, but a lot of people know me as addict. I'm glad that, I'm here. Glad that I eventually found this program, and it is a way of life. Hope it doesn't freak anybody out that maybe anybody that sort of has doubts about why they're here, or may have just found this program and be in denial. Somebody's piggybacking into the meeting on members' numbers, and there's a lot of abuse in the chat. And I must admit that when I was using, I got quite immune to that sort of behavior. That's how people talk to each other out in the madness. And I didn't end, I ended up in that madness. But I didn't know in the beginning when I first picked up drugs. I was like, I'll tell you a little bit about me. But what happens, last night I went out for dinner and went to see play at the Barbican, and it was in Spanish. It was Hamlet in Spanish. And so I'm aware that I did know before. And I have a friend that we go to see productions, and it's good for me to be able to keep going out. But we were talking, and it's like it. He was talking about gambling, and for me, I grew up around race courses and races and dog tracks and things. And my my dad was a gambler, my mom was a gambler, and I grew up in that kind of soup of codependency around money. And the fear. And one of the things that has happened to me since I've been practicing this program is I've learned to trust a higher power, a God of my understanding, who, somehow I've learned to lean on that. Any codependency I have is with my higher power. And we were talking about, fear, and not being loved, and how difficult it is for addicts to be loved, because we all have this, I don't know, what I've heard shared over the years, is that addicts really struggle with opening up to another human being, and in intimacy, we flee from it. I had to do quite a lot of work around that, I suffered a lot of shame in the fellowship because I could not understand. I just couldn't get it, understand that bit. And it was where addiction went, because if you've been clean a while, you start to understand that addiction is a progressive, incurable, and fatal illness, and it progresses when we're clean, which is something that I got surprised about. But I need a progressive recovery, living this program has taught me that I do need to not allow the disease in any shape or form to come into my life. And it's like I don't, if it's if it's got that color about it, I put it into, well, I'm not you're not coming in, because I can't afford, and some people think I'm strict about that stuff, and that's what I practice for myself, and that's the message I carry. That, it's just to be vigilant in the understanding that this disease doesn't go away, and it gets subtle, and it comes in all sorts of forms, relationships, shopping, money. These have all been, real areas that I've had to do some work around. Money has been huge because, my dad, I know that people who are, know about tech stuff and work in that all the time might not know or remember that we used to have a thing called cash, and my dad would come home from the races with a lot of cash. Like hundreds, thousands, and it'd be all on the table, and it's like, so, when I was around drug dealers, I didn't have a problem with all that, it's like a lot of cash, lot of drugs on the table, and the drugs got worse. I've started off, sex and drugs and rock and roll, relationships and the culture of music and, in the 60s, and the kind of drugs we were all using, they were writing about them, and we just lived it, And obviously, over the years, the drugs have got, I don't know, the drugs, well, the drugs got harder for me. A certain drug has stopped working, and I wouldn't get as high as I used to, and I switched to another drug, and then, it went on like that, and, I ended up in a caravan, through all the life stuff that happens, ending marriages and, no money, messing up careers and all the things, the promise of my life that, I had so many opportunities. And so I ended up with my two children who were really crazy with this disease, and living with an addict who was a lot younger than me, had, access to the drugs, because I had to stay at home with the kids most of the time. I did have a sense of right and wrong. It was a bit warped. All my kind of thinking was warped through the drugs I took, but there was a core of me that had, a responsibility to my children still, and I would do anything to keep them from being taken from me. I social services were involved in a lot of stuff, and but I managed to evade them. I was quite very dishonest in my dealings with them, because I was terrified. There were a lot of people who wanted to harm my children, harm me, and so that ending up in this caravan, you'd never, I mean, if I tell you, we've got online meetings. There's hundreds of them online, and there are hundreds of them everywhere. And we used to, we, when I first got clean, there were people around that would tell you know, this is a global fellowship. When we're saying the Serenity Prayer, we're holding hands with all the other meetings in the world that are saying the Serenity Prayer at the same time, you know. And I loved that idea. I loved the idea that this program expresses love, and it's the unconditional love. The hippie in me. The hippie in me, you know, oh, I found this, you know, the hippiedom of my dreams, and nobody's using drugs because, you know, we were all hippies until we didn't have any drugs, and then the table got tipped up, and somebody had hit somebody, or, you know, flower pots went flying out of windows, and, you know, it was like really quite, my using got quite dark at one point, you know, I mean, it was a miracle that I was found in this caravan, because in the whole of this county, which stretches along the east coast all the way down from Scotland down to southern England, you know, Essex, where I was, and you know, they, you know, there was three meetings, I think, three meetings a week. One was in Southend, and my caravan was quite close to that. But they were all crazy there. You know, that's bumper sticker clean and crazy. Some of them turn up and go, well, I haven't had a drink, you know, because they go to AA, and you know, but they were drinking, and they come to NA and say they were clean, go to AA and say they were sober if they hadn't had a drink, but they were using other drugs. So the message was there because they had literature, which is something that I've always looked for in meetings, you know, when you go to face-to-face meetings, that if there is literature on the table, it is part of a power greater than me, the power of words that tell me about the disease that I suffer with. But they also tell me what I can do about it. And you know, my understanding of the spiritual principles, I mean, I was a people pleaser, right? So they suggested I get a sponsor, and I was in this meeting, and they kept jabbing me in the ribs because there was a girl there who, she was a girl, and I was quite old when I got to NA, and I thought, you know, it's like, but she had nice boots on, and that was where I was at. I had a pair of trainers on that I hadn't taken off for about, I don't know, at least 5 years, and you know, the jeans the same, you know, where we lived, it was pretty crazy, and the way we lived. And so I did, I asked her, and it was like she was a token, you know, and but then she gave me a number and told me to call her, we didn't have a phone anymore. We didn't have mobiles in those days. The only phone that I had access to was the one in the middle of the village, and was kind of, I used to go and phone her, and I thought, oh, this is happening, oh dear, God. And she would say, well, you know, that it's all right, don't worry, go to a meeting, you know, do, you know, be, you know, and then she'd make suggestions, and I'd think, what the hell does she know about my life, you know, I've been married twice, I've been around the world, I've been famous and infamous, you know, I've done this and done that, and what does she know about it? She's only in her 20s. I tell you what, she knew how to work the steps. She was cleaner than me. She had 4 years at the time, which nowadays doesn't seem like a lot, but actually it made a difference. And the group of people that were around then were They did practice a program and they were clean and they were improving their lives. And, I mean, sometimes I'd think, oh, you've all got eating disorders, you're all too fat. Because I was like 6 stone 10 or something. I don't know if you know what that is. I was wasted. I didn't eat much. So anyway, I'd phone my sponsor again and I'd say, oh, blah, blah, blah. And she said, did you do what I suggested? And I said, oh, no, I didn't do that. And she said, well, how do you expect anything to change? And I was like, what? So then I wouldn't phone her. And then I'd still end up in the same mess. And it's the story about sponsorship with newcomers. And I don't know if any of you relate to that. But one day I was in, I went to the phone box and my sponsor wasn't there. And her husband was there and he was in recovery as well. He was one of the group of people that we all used to go to meetings together. And I he said, what? And I told him about what was happening. Oh, there's a drug dealer due any minute and he's gonna come with a machete and the boyfriend's there and if he comes back and there's no food and there's no money, there's nothing I can do. And the kids are due back any minute and there's no dinner and it's all my fault. And he's, at the end of all this diatribe, he said to me, look, when you put the phone down, pray. And I was like, what do you mean, pray? What good's that going to do? I'm going to get killed any minute. So anyway, what I did, and he said, well, when you've done that, go and find somewhere quiet to sit and meditate. I was like, what? I mean, these days I meditate every day, and it's like, well, in those days it was like I only meditated if I was stoned. That was my understanding then. And anyway, so I did that. I put the phone down and I think I said something like, if you're there, God, do something, show me. And I swear that anybody who knows about Doctor Who and the police box, it was like that. And it was like I went to a different dimension because I felt different. I don't know what happened. I must have surrendered. And so I went out and I sat down by the mill, this village where we were, that there was a mill and the sun was shining like dappled sunbeams on the water as it was moving, and I just sat and watched it, and I kind of went somewhere. Anyway, well, I thought I pulled myself together. I thought I better go and see what's happening back in the ranch. I got there, and there was nobody there. The kids had gone. I found out later they'd gone to their friend's house, and no drug dealers, no anybody. There was a mess, so obviously something had happened, but it didn't involve me. And I found that in my early recovery, when I shared what was happening in my life, it went away, somehow. It went away. I mean, I got chased by cows one day in the field, and I shared about it, and this guy said, bullocks. He said, they're bullocks, not cows, they're bullocks. I was like, oh, no wonder. I was a bit scared. I was running away from them. I found out, what is the difference between, fear and, genuine concern? And they said, when you're crossing the road, you look both ways because your fear motivates you to make sure you don't get run over. But that fear that I used to feel when I opened my eyes in the morning and I felt like I was falling out the side of a building. That kind of adrenaline of, oh, this, that bastard, he did this, and how am I going to pay the rent next week? I was never in the moment reading something in the basic text. By the time I got to the full stop, I couldn't remember what the first word was. And somehow they told me, no matter what, do not pick up the first one. So like I had that tattoo done inside my eyelids, and it's still there. I do not pick up, it, like I said, if it's tinged with the disease, and I've got a bit of doubt, then it's like, I stay on the right side. The vigilance is there, because it says in the basic text, vigilance is the price of freedom. And I had a sponsor later on in the program. I had another sponsor, and she was quite tough, and she told me everything has a price. And I discovered that with, taking risks in relationships. I never saw them as being part of addiction. Although I knew in the back of my mind, using relationships are, can be toxic. We know so much more these days about how and what's written about it. We've got new literature. We were lucky to be able to get your hands on a basic text in those days. We had a little white book, and basic things. And I went to this meeting in Chelsea, and I got a travel card when I got my gyro. We used to get gyro. And this woman, she had 8 years, and she wrote in my book, she wrote in this basic text, and she said, keep coming back, it will work. And I was, those little things like spiritual awakenings almost, they kept me coming back. And having building the face that I have, because I have, and I hope I don't upset anybody who has a religious God in their life. But for me, I had to give up religion to get the program, because the religions that I'd looked for the solution in were all like had lots of rules, and you can't do this, and you can't that, that. And it was almost like you can't wear this color, you've got to wear that color. And I'd go to church, for example, and they were all too bright and shiny for me. And I used to go to the Rasta church, and the Rastas were like, you have to smoke a pound of dope again, grass. And I thought that was spiritual as well, and the Buddhists, I got freaked out by the fact that they said that, none of this is real, it's all an illusion. There's little messages I got from them I didn't trust from religions, These days it's different. I will take good stuff from any source, and I have as part of my step three, I really did a lot of research into what, the universe, what is it? Why are we the only evolved civilization? And we don't live very long. And how, why? And that stuff is, the relationship that I have with God, the God of my understanding, is, I can touch it. I'm sitting here. It's like it's close. It's there. And I ask for help in the moment, and trying to live this thing that we understand, the spiritual principles that build the program. For me, learning to be honest and having some kind of clue about what the disease looks like was what was in my step one, my first step one. We didn't have the working guide then. We did it through kind of sharing, really. And the understanding that you have to be clean for it to work. And I had to get over all my reservations and, what that was about. And it's almost like they were in my face before I knew it. But I did start to get better, and everybody said to me, "Get those kids out of that carrot, that cardboard box. They deserve a life, and you're not giving them the best." And I was like, "I like living in a carrot, but I like being close to the earth and feeling it when you wake up in the morning." Sometimes it was like the mist would come through the floorboards, and it was really cold, and the dog had. Whimpering around looking for somewhere to jump up. I'm suffered the consequences of that. I have really bad arthritis, chronic arthritis, which I mean I have had the most awful time in the last 5 years. I had one, two, three, or four operations. I had one on my shoulder that was really freaked me out because for months I couldn't do anything. I had to wear a sling. It was very difficult to negotiate places. And it's like challenges in recovery, no matter what, do not pick up the first one. Yeah, no matter what. Are you prepared to go to any length? Oh, well, I've proved that I am as far as I can up to this moment. And I had a woke up one morning recently, and my left eye, I couldn't see anything. It was black, it was like I thought, oh, rubbed it a bit and thought, well, this is all right, I see what it's like tomorrow. And then I didn't do anything, and that's living in denial. I know that now. And subsequently, I went to quite a lot of A&Es and waited 4 and 5 hours, and then another 4 and 5 hours, and only to be told at 11 o'clock at night that I was going to lose a sight in my eye if I didn't have an operation. And to come back sort of day after tomorrow and be prepared to have an operation. And actually, it worked out that I had the operation on a Saturday, and they reattached the retina. And you do it, without a general anaesthetic, which I found really interesting because looking through the eye they're operating on. And the surgeon, I'm on first name terms with her. She's like that. She's quite progressive, modern young woman, and very talented and knows what she's doing. She has music on in the theatre and operating theatre, and she sings the music while she's operating, but at the same time. My eyeballs on this big screen that she's teaching as well, and every now and then she'll say something. So I knew exactly what she was doing. It was really, really interesting the first time it happened. Last time, I had a more complex operation, and by the end, I was really like, I've been brave up to now, and I'm breathing, and I am meditating, and I can't do this any longer. It was like 1 hour and 20 minutes, and last 10 minutes were really difficult. And she knew. She said to me, "Hold on, not much left," because they had to repair a lot of stuff with lasers. There were drills going. You can hear the soft noise of the drill, and you can hear the noise of the laser, and. I didn't let my imagination run riot. I just stayed with my higher power. And I thought, if I can do natural childbirth, I can do this. anyway, I haven't touched on the thing with my children. This has been one of the most wonderful things about recovering is the relationship I have with my children today. And my son was there. I had to. Recuperate from that operation, the first one and the second one, laying on my right side for 24 hours a day. I think I was allowed 5 minutes every half an hour to stretch or have something to eat. comfort breaks and things like that, but it was quite a discipline to do that. And thank God for K-dramas, my latest obsession. Yeah, and but I love recovery because my relationships with my children have become so deep and meaningful. My son has a lot of, he had his own problems with addiction and discovered the program. You know, he knew that it was there, and you can't force people to get clean and have this wonderful life. You know, but I carried the message because I was living it, and he somehow through God and the fellowship, he got clean, and he started going to meetings, and has now he has all the promises of a wonderful life, which I know we're not supposed to have, but you know that the fact is, if you stay clean and and you do certain actions that are suggested by stuff you discover in your network, you can make changes in your life, because that's what they told me. You have to change your personality when you come here, and it was like, oh, what? I don't want to. I'm this. I'm that. But in actual fact, I have changed a lot. Somebody said to me the other day, because I was sharing about smoking cigarettes, and she was trying to stop, and I was sharing with her about it, and if my eyes were open, I had a cigarette in my mouth. It's like no matter what time of day it was, and through being clean for a while, I stopped. I wanted to stop early on, but my sponsor said to me, "You'll stop when you're ready," and it is something that happened to me. I surrendered and used the program around nicotine, and she said to me, "I can't imagine my sponsor." She said, "Smoking? What?" Yeah, and I think people can't imagine what I was like when I was using. It was totally nuts. And I mean, there are times when I think about days when I was so desperate to find a skinny guy somewhere. Sorry if you're a skinny guy, but a skinny guy somewhere that owed me a tenner so that I could find another skinny guy to score a bag of gear off and feel all right for 10 minutes. And it's not like that for me anymore. Addiction's become one of those things where I recognize obsession. I recognize that like excitement of, oh, this will fix it. This feels wonderful, that addiction. But there are things that give me joy, and being able to differentiate between them comes through working the program. You start to find out what that is, what the nature of addiction is, because it can lead you down some weird alleyways. don't know how long I've been sharing for. I'm not sure how long I'm supposed to share for. Anyway, I'll carry on until Jay stops me. Yeah, I the relationship, of course, with the higher power is something that you have to live through things that challenge your, faith. The fear that comes up. I heard a guy called Pepe. I had a tape when I was in the caravan. We used to have little tapes. And it was a bootleg tape somebody had got. excuse me, a recording of his share. And he used to talk about there's two forces in the universe, and one is fear and the other one is love. And it's like, where decide where you want to be. And this is like step 11 stuff. It's like, God's will is easy. My will hurts. My will, I get into trouble, and that's what the 10th step's about. It stops me from making the same mistake over and over. I recognize my addiction, and that like the evil force comes in, and it's very subtle. Can get me into trouble. I've got in trouble with credit cards, all sorts, things, people, relationship. People jump off buildings and stuff, because they can't bear it. My dad died on my 5th NA birthday, and he wanted me there. I was clean. It's quite a privilege to be with someone when they pass. I was with my mother, but technically I was using, I wasn't in recovery, but I had to learn how to grieve her because, the things that kill that emotional pain are the thing, the things that let you down in the end, the drugs. And excuse me. Through the fellowship, I got into a university. I went to university clean, and I adored it. I loved it. I loved learning. I had an appetite for learning I never had when I was at school. I used to hate it at school, but what happened was something else. The change in me opened my mind to be able to, accept constructive criticism from a tutor that I didn't think much of, and red lines through all my essays because I didn't have kind of a lot of skill of writing less essays. I had to learn how to, do a lot of stuff, and I had those moments, looking out the window of the college. That I was the building, the college building was Catholic actually. And they were teaching us things that they used to burn women for 500 years ago. It really made me laugh. And I enjoyed learning. I enjoyed it. And I had this moment of looking out at the blue sky and these white fluffy clouds and the cumulus nimbus shape, they just floated across the sky. And I had a moment thinking, what, how did I get here? I was a failed suicide in the caravan. My using took me to that place. I didn't go on about the attempts that I'd made. I was talking to my son about it the other day. And my daughter too. Part of the amends process has been about, talking stuff through, all the hurts and all the times when I've done stuff that wasn't me really. It was motivated by the drugs and and the behaviours. I mean, I laugh about it now, but I was pretty crazy. And people in the fellowship was like, get away from that sick bitch, she's not. No, they didn't say that really. But it was like I felt like that. I mean, I didn't, I couldn't see through the distortions of my understanding. I couldn't see the truth. One of the things I found that, I have assets, but when I'm in my defect, my, they're like clouds that come across the sun of my recovery. You know, the sun is the sunlight of the purity. You know, I was talking to someone the other day who does healing, and not being pure, it's like the healing comes through you. I know this is an outside issue, but it's been part of my journey. The healing comes through you, but if you're blocked anywhere, it can be quite difficult to, to be that vessel to help. I mean, that's why the program is so good, you know, because it's because we've been sick, and we have understanding of what the disease does to us and how we've got out of it. You know, that's that story about the guy that falls in the hole, and all these people keep walking past, and they keep saying, "Get me out, get me out." Everybody, people can't, they try and pull him out, and he can't get out. And this little guy comes along, and he jumps in the hole. And the guy says to him, "Look, now we're both stuck." And he goes, "Yeah, but I've been in this hole before, and I know the way out." They both climb out. I always love that story, you know. Yeah, thank you for letting me share. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. I think it's been quite a long time, and hope you will have a chance to share back to me. Yeah. And please don't do the guy in the chat box suggests. Anyway, thank you, Jay, for letting me share, and thank you all for being here and listening to me.